This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. We took a 1 week sabbatical in between, as we do sometimes for our episodes, but I'm glad to have you back along with my co-host here. I'm Andrew Reich, just to introduce myself first, and I'll be joined here by Mr. Adam Murray, my co-host. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
I'm good. Do you feel a little bit older, a little grayer with the NBA season yet? Does it still have that new car smell, or do you feel like you're kind of in the mix?
We are getting answers now. We are figuring out who's working, who's not working, who's good, who isn't good.
So on the Westworld timeline, where are we at on that one? Are we at the point where we're really starting to actually get answers, or are we still like we've only half opened the quote unquote mystery box that they always call it in the fictional world?
It's half opened, but we can see the allusions to future world coming.
Have you watched that show, Westworld? It sort of hit the zeitgeist in pop culture over the last few weeks with the finale just finishing up on HBO. A lot of mainstream talk. Kind of a confusing show, if you ask me.
No, it's the same. It's just the show of the week. And, you know, before this, it was Stranger Things.
I did like Stranger Things a lot. I like those 80s-centric type of shows, so... So Stranger Things was right up my alley, but yeah, there's so many different shows. Was there one in particular that you kind of hung on to as we get into the, you get all your best ofs and top tens and top 25s, like what's Adam Murray's like top five with movies, television, pop culture in general, maybe a sports event?
I have been, well, the sports event of the year would have to be the Olympics, wouldn't you think?
Not Game 7 of the World Series?
No, because only America cared about Game 7.
And not Game 7 of the NBA Finals in the summer?
Based upon ratings, the world tuned in to watch the Olympics. Nobody outside of, the U.S. Baseball isn't big anywhere, but what, Japan? and Latin, Latin America.
Well, there's this assumption that the Cubs winning the World Series is going to rejuvenate it. I mean, I'm very, very skeptical about that, of course. But then again, I'm not a huge hardcore baseball fan. I'm not rooting for them to be. I don't root extra hard for baseball to be successful simply because I just don't care enough to care. College football, I didn't really remember too much anything too memorable.
Well, this year was terrible.
Yeah, Jackson won the Heisman Trophy. It was, and it's sad to say this because he just passed away. But it reminded me of when Rashan Salaam won the Heisman Trophy in '94. It was like, oh yeah, Rashan Salaam won the Heisman Trophy. It was almost like oh yeah, that happened. Lamar Jackson winning the Heisman kind of felt that way. It was like, well, nothing else too notable happened, and there was no star player on the top teams in the playoffs, so let's just give it to this guy.
There's really no star players on any team, and just look into the NFL draft. You have Leonard Fournette's a top two pick, and he had a horrible season, and the defensive end from Texas A&M, actually number one pick, and he was injured at the beginning of the year. It's just like, well, there's no QBs, only the North Carolina QB is going to go in the first round. It's just like, well, this season hasn't been that good.
Mitch Trubisky's is he like a redshirt sophomore or something?
Yes.
Okay, so he can go if he wants to, unless he already declared. Because the new thing that I've noticed, this would drive me nuts if this happened in the NCAA tournament. Have you noticed a new thing where people declare for the draft before the bowl game, and some players like decide not to even play in the bowl game?
Well, that's the
Florida, that happened last year with like an assortment of guys. With Fournette, we're not sure yet. There's no definitive story about whether or not he's going to play in the What bowl game is it? Is it the Outback Bowl?
I don't know. Meineke Cartier.
I think it might be the Capital One Citrus
Point
Bowl. No.
Peach.
It's I got it. It's the Buffalo Wild Wings Citrus Bowl, which is a contract. I mean, could you ever drink orange juice with Buffalo Wings?
You can have a citrusy zest wing. You can have barbecue, and you can have sweet, and you can have Asian zing, and...
Yeah,
garlic parmesan.
But to wrap a bow around that, like pop culture wise, I mean, well, the election's number one, you know, for a lot of different reasons. But like for movies and TV, like was there a top one for you, like something that you really remember before we start to actually talk about the topic we're supposed to talk about?
Just quickly, Finding Dory was terrible. That was the only thing I took away from this year. Baseball, if it weren't the Cubs, I think we said this before, nobody would really care, because think about it. Growing up, what were the only two real cable channels that showed the same team every week? It was either TBS with the Braves or it was WGN with the Cubs. So
and
that's
the White Sox at night, but that Comiskey, but that was not as – it wasn't as popular, obviously.
So that's why people around the country – it's like, oh, I remember watching the Cubs as a kid, the same way you hear, you know, people – you know, a little older than us, like, oh, yeah, you know, there are a lot of Steelers fans, a lot of Cowboys fans. Like, well, yeah, because that was the, those are the big game Raiders fans, because those are the only games on in the 70s yeah. and 80s.
Was that any kind of influence with the Bulls, with WGN, or were the Bulls just legitimately good and it was just more, it was more convenient for fans to watch all their games? Like, do you think their fan base was bolstered by the fact that WGN aired with, you know, with Johnny Bock and them would air almost the entirety of their games?
To an extent, partly, yes. And then don't forget, Michael Jordan, if you have the best guy in the entire, you know, history of the sport, well, okay, then.
Yeah.
You know, it's just...
it had more of the Pete Rozelle model in the NBA where, I mean, local airing things locally helped you. You know, and if you had a superstation like TBS did with the Hawks, I don't know if you remember this, but they used to play Hawks games all the time on TBS. You know, but it wasn't something where, like, it was, like, a super big deal to watch the Hawks play on TBS. It was just, like, just another game. Whereas for baseball, for some reason, people really latched on to that kind of that coin phrase of America's team and, the you know, the lovable losers of the Cubs, you know, with Harry Carey. It was just it was a little different, though, with the NBA, the way they sort of orchestrated their broadcast deals locally. But that's a whole topic for another day. You ready to talk about relevant, like, contemporary NBA basketball?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's start with the Memphis Grizzlies, because they've been very, very interesting over the last month because of their typical – I mean, does attrition just follow the Memphis Grizzlies no matter what they do? Like, we talked about how we really wanted them to try to make a change in the summer, and they actually did. They did go out there. They signed Chandler Parsons. They bring in James Ennis. They let – They let a couple of other guys walk that were on the previous, you know, MASH unit for the Memphis Grizzlies, and they brought in a new coach, Dave Fizdale. Things seem similar, but it's kind of scary how the injury bug just continues to bite them in the worst way. Is there any silver lining to it other than their very odd success over the last couple of weeks?
The injury bug has come because they've kept the same roster since, you know, for how many years now? You can't – well, it's the injury bug. Well, it's the same thing with – let's look at New Orleans. Oh, well, they have the injury bug. Well, yeah, anytime you have Tyreek Evans and Jrue Holiday, of course you're going to say one of them is going to be injured. And it's the same thing. Well, you have Marc Gasol. Well, he's battled injuries a lot. Zach Randolph doesn't have much. It's just the same. If you have the same five guys year in, year out, of course they're going to keep getting injured and getting dinged up. And that was just from their style of basketball. The difference this year is you have an injection, a little bit of new talent. And it's just, I think everybody's just sort of, you're like, okay, they're Memphis. They'll be 500. They'll be around the 7 or 8 seed. Nobody really pays attention to them, but they are just surprising everybody because, you know, it's no longer that grind 'em out game they've been doing.
Yeah, they've perked upwards a little bit with the 3-point shooting, helped a lot by Troy Daniels. You probably remember Troy Daniels from that one game where he was with the Houston Rockets and he sort of bailed him out in a playoff game against the Blazers in 2014. He had a cup of coffee with the Charlotte Hornets, but I don't remember him doing anything too like notable, unless you can kind of think up anything. And now he, you know, then he signed that deal with the Grizzlies because they needed 3-point shooting. And we always said, well, they never approach like players in free agency or in the open market to improve their shooting. They just kind of double down on what they always have. But this summer, like we were talking about, they really did try to do things to diversify, even though it wasn't really broad strokes, because they had to spend so much money to keep Mike Conley on a max deal. They already had Marc Gasol in the fold. He was coming back from a broken foot. Zebo, Zach Randolph, still very valuable. We were kind of wondering about the idea of him as the sixth man. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. But the thing with the Grizzlies is they've won six in a row. Their defense is still good. I mean, have you noticed any kind of deficiencies with their defense versus the Jaeger years?
It's
a little bit more open.
Yeah, it's not as ruthless as it was.
Marc Gasol shooting the three sort of helps him out too.
Yeah, well, everybody's just shooting the threes now.
Yeah, but Gasol, he's hit some clutch ones, and that's another part of the Grizzlies that's made them successful. I think they have those different metrics where you can look at games that are within 5 points or less in the last 5 minutes or in the final minute, and like the final 5 minutes is considered like crunch time, and the final minute is considered super crunch. do you like those metrics there? Super crunch.
Super crunch. That's a new one.
That's one I read. I was like, super crunch. The final minute. I would just call it nail biting time. But the Grizzlies are like the most efficient team in the league, like by far in crunch time. You know, it's them. And the one thing though is, in order to do that, you have to be in close games. You know, in the last 5 minutes. You know, but they seem to be able to pull it out, winning six games in a row. There was one particular game, I believe, against the Lakers where they gave up 62 points at halftime. And Fizdale really let him have it. He had just consoled with Zach Randolph because he took about six games off because of the death of his mother. So, you know, Fizdale was very emotional. He's fired up. And he really gave it to the Grizzlies for a poor performance in the first half. The Grizzlies came out. They gave it back to the Lakers, won that game. And then they just had one against the Golden State Warriors where, I don't know, it could have been a combination of Memphis being super motivated because the Warriors really stepped on them like bugs in all four of the games they played last season, including the one where they clinched the 73 win mark in the regular season. I believe that was against the Warriors, the Grizzlies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so a little bit extra motivation for the Grizzlies, but it seemed like what combination was it of the Warriors just weren't really feeling it, or the Grizzlies just might have their number in a ways.
Well, it's just, as we said, they're the evil team that everybody has to beat. So everybody's playing their A game, and you know, every game, even, you know, there's Golden State hasn't been blowing out many teams like they were last year.
That's true. Their defense has been a little more deficient than in previous seasons.
You know, last year was just pure domination. This one is like, well, maybe once a week they'll win by like 30 or, you know, 40. But for the most part, they're closer games this year.
A very quick takeaway before we go back to Memphis after the Warriors win, since we're talking about the Warriors. What you thought of Klay Thompson's 60-point and 29-minute game?
Efficient? Super crunch time?
Super crunch time. Well, that's like the opposite of super crunch time, because like that game was literally over at halftime. The third quarter was probably not even necessary for Clay. But I mean, would you have played him in the fourth quarter? Or do you think it was absolutely the right thing to do to just kind of?
I don't see any reason to risk injury. And the same way, you know, like certain teams, like, oh, we need to play Anthony Davis for 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Why? We're already down by 20 of the game. We're going to lose the game. You don't want to have that freak fourth quarter injury that all of a sudden, you know, now he's out for, you know, a month because of, oh, well, he was.
You feel like you're pouring it on, and one of those Indiana Pacers players, that was the team they're playing when he scored the 60 points, like takes it out on him, gives him a bit of a shove if he's going to the lane. You know, the problem, though, is that Clay's a shooter, so it's hard to beat it. You know, if you have a guy like Kobe Bryant or, you know, Michael Jordan going for that, they're probably doing a lot of their dirty work attacking the basket, getting to the foul line. And Clay can get to the foul line, too, but he's one of those guys, and we saw this with Sacramento. We've seen this in we saw this in the playoffs against the Thunder, where he really does his worst damage, like 90% of his damage from the 3-point line. It's hard to injure a guy or touch up a guy when he's just sitting around the arc, unless it looks blaringly obvious that you're just going after him. You know, but you don't want a Patrick Beverley situation. Like I totally understand that.
Even that, you just don't want, like, a Marcus Smart incident where you're just, oh, he twists an ankle all of a sudden. Well, he'll be out for 3 days, and all of a sudden that 3 days becomes 3 weeks.
Wait, elaborate that with Smart, what he did this time.
Well, it's what year hasn't he twisted his ankle or twisted his knee or landed awkwardly, and all of a sudden, oh, he'll be, you know, he might miss a game, and all of a sudden that one game is a month.
Yeah, well, you know, there's always kind of these sort of like mysterious injuries, like, or, you know, kind of like sit downs due to like one particular reason that has nothing. Like they said, Blake Griffin had to sit the most recent game against the Pelicans due to a knee. But I mean, come on. Nothing's wrong with Blake Griffin's knee. They just needed to sit him. So they just gave him that injury. You know what I'm saying? Let's just revert back to the Grizzlies first. The Nasty Nine, I'm trying to figure out who the Nasty Nine are. Let me see. Marc Gasol, Tony Allen, who's still very good defensively. Does that surprise you at his age?
Nope. That's what he's made is, you know.
But that's literally like, that's like the only thing he does now. Like whenever like Lou Williams got hot in that Laker game and they put Tony Allen on him, you know?
Yep. He doesn't really do much of anything more, but. Yeah, he's still, you know, there's a home for him. There's a niche.
Zebo, kind of the leader of the second unit, which hurts his real plus minus, but he's still a very effective player when he's on the court, of course, just not great teammates around him. Andrew Harrison and Wade Baldwin, the fourth, who we talked about. Troy Williams, who was the undrafted free agent out of Indiana, played with the Suns in the summer league, but the Grizzlies signed him. You think the Suns regret not keeping him?
The Suns really had no room for him.
Yeah. Jamichael Green, who's the one who's starting ahead of Zebo in that starting lineup. Jarrell Martin, the second-round pick out of LSU in his, I think, his second year. And then the last one here is Troy Daniels, the three-point shooter. They just pick up Tony Douglas because of the Mike Conley injury. What is the – like, here's the thing. With Mike Conley, what is the prognosis here? Is it going to be probably about 4 months? Or maybe
it'll be as long as they're in playoff contention, as long as they're safe from not being out of it, it'll be, you know, 10 games before the end of the season.
Here's the thing. The Nasty Nine, we like putting nicknames on things. But the idea that, like, for example, the MASH unit that the Memphis Grizzlies have slapped together here that have gotten successful, the idea that that's sustainable is, like, it's impossible, right? Like, this is not something where it's like, oh, well, let's just shut Conley down because this works. Like, that's not how the NBA works, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you see here? Like, for example, Vince Carter will eventually come back from, you know, the hip injury he has. Chandler Parsons, all I can do is put my hands up in the air. I don't really know what to say about that.
That's fair enough.
It's a tough deal. I mean, is that the worst signing of the offseason so far, Chandler Parsons?
No,
or do you think it's too early?
It's too early. They just haven't – he hasn't fit in yet. And, you know, the system is rolling, and we know this really isn't going to last because, you know, it's just through attrition. He'll find his rhythm just like everybody else, but –
And then there's James Ennis. But James Ennis is important because he's a small forward that was supposed to fill in for Chandler Parsons. So he does have a role. You know, you don't want to play Troy Williams that many minutes. You know what I'm saying? So it kind of forces you to go a little smaller than you expect. The great thing about Marc Gasol is you never go small when Gasol's at the five. You always have to have a center to accommodate him because he's a traditional back-to-the-basket center who's also got a very good mid-range game. So he always messes up the other team's defense. So, I mean, maybe the Grizzlies are the team that gives the Warriors problems. I know who it isn't, and that's the Los Angeles Clippers, because the Clippers had a weird outing where, you know, because we took 2 weeks off, is that they went on TNT on a Thursday night game about a week ago, and they really gave it to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Very impressive win, looked good defensively. LeBron looked frustrated. Cleveland was sort of in a funk where they lost 3 games in a row, too. Then about a week later, they turn around at home on a Wednesday night game where they had a lot of rest in between, and they got shellacked by the Golden State Warriors. What do you take away from those two games?
That the Clippers roster really needs to be. It's you can see like J.J. Redick and Austin Rivers and.
Well, they don't really have shooters. That's the problem.
They don't have shooters, and then the guys they have aren't going to defend the opposing shooters.
They have one great shooter in Redick, you know, and Jamal Crawford is feast or famine sometimes, but he's still a pretty efficient scorer at his age. Chris Paul's having an MVP year, caliber year. Blake Griffin is still playing really, really well. But, you know, even the additions of guys like Moses Bates and Austin Rivers, defensively they were playing better than people expected to start the season when they got off to their hot run to have the best record in the league or the best record in the Western Conference. But it's kind of starting to slowly go back to the median where their second unit is not – they don't stagger it. So when the second unit comes in, they sort of get rocked a little bit, and the starting unit has to come back in and patch things up. The other problem is that just defensively, even though Chris Paul is a great defensive guard, he just has a lot of trouble with the Warriors' backcourt when they run their screens. You know, it's just a lot of there's a lot of troubling things with the Warriors where they tried the same thing for like three seasons now and it hasn't worked. But what can they do to really change it is the problem.
I don't. Just the only thing is just maybe they're not showing everything for the playoffs and then they're just going to get more physical. I don't know what they're.
I don't think Doc Rivers is that smart.
Yes,
I hate to say that. And I think he's a really good coach, but I don't think he's that clever. I think Billy Donovan, I don't know. Let's talk about that back, going back to the playoffs one when they kind of threw the Megadeth lineup out there with Waiters and Adams and Robertson. Like, do you think that Billy Donovan had a trick up his sleeve, or he just kind of like fancifully, you know, fell into that lineup and it worked?
I think he just fell into it.
Okay. You know, I mean, you can kind of say the same thing about Cleveland. You know, you get into it, you know, Cleveland was sort of desperation mode, but that was a team that was very well designed to stop the Warriors. I said that from the beginning. Even when the Warriors beat the Cavs twice in the regular season, I said they didn't beat them, but that's the best recipe for how to beat the Warriors. You know, you have to go too big. And you have to or a too big lineup, not too big, you know, but you got LeBron there, who's a unique individual, of course, as a small forward / point forward. You know, the Clippers just they don't have that defensive identity yet. I mean, would you call them pretenders or do you think their defense is legitimate?
I don't want to say they're pretenders. It's just they need to get everything worked out and they need to get bigger. They're trying. It seems like they're trying to play small ball, and it's just not working for them. It's just like we said last year. You're sort of falling into the Warriors' trap. You're playing their style. Play your style, and you know.
Let me give you another team. They actually have the same record as the Clippers now, since the Clippers took a slide, and this team has been on a roll, winning six in a row, just like the Memphis Grizzlies. The Houston Rockets. What are they doing right? You know, we always talk about, you know, there's always like such negativity at the start. What's going wrong? What's wrong? Why are they so bad? Like with the Houston, what are they doing right?
I'm going to say it's just they're all healthy right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, you know, it's just James Harden doing the James Harden thing. And, you know, you've seen him tinker with lineups where occasionally you'll have Patrick Beverley and they've moved Eric Gordon to the second unit now.
Did you see Patrick Beverley's defense against Russell Westbrook at the very end of that game where they squeaked out the win?
Crunch time?
No, that was super crunch time. This was the final minute of the game. This is super crunch. We're going to have to title this podcast episode Super Crunch Time.
Super Crunch Time.
No, Russell Westbrook, I don't know. Do you think it's in Westbrook's head because of the bang in the knees from a few years ago? Or do you think there's just no possible way that Russell Westbrook's thinking about that when Beverly's taking away his airspace like that on the, you know, in those go-ahead jump shots that he missed against Beverly in the Rockets game?
No, he's not thinking about that. That was way too long ago.
Okay. You know, Beverly, he's a bulldog. He's a guy who will get under your skin. And the Rockets really needed that, you know. And D'Antoni, here's the thing. Here's the weird thing about D'Antoni. We've seen enough of his teams to know what a Mike D'Antoni team looks like. This doesn't really look like a Mike D'Antoni team. Would you kind of accurately say that?
Well, half the players aren't.
They shoot a lot of threes, of course. That's the one big characteristic. But after that, it's a very different lineup from like the Suns and the Knicks and definitely the Lakers when they had that hodgepodge with Kobe Bryant and Dwight Howard and a hobbled Steve Nash. You know, it's just very, very different. Maybe it's the mustache. Maybe saving the mustache is sort of changes identity.
It's, I don't want to say, it's just he's. Just look at that lineup. It's you have, yeah, it's a different thing, but as long as you have Clint Capella, who's making even more strides this year, he's become
very good rebounder. Very good rebounder. Yeah.
Which that doesn't, very good rebounder and D'Antoni system don't, those two words don't match up.
Exactly.
So that's sort of,
getting offensive rebounds has not been their forte.
So that's sort of why you have this defensive presence. Okay, let's sort of – I think you sort of learned, well, they try to make, you know, Dwight Howard into this player he really isn't. So they just go, okay, let's just have Clint be Clint, and he's, you know, not developed enough to really know how to get out of – you know, he's not dynamic enough.
Yeah, it's a deep roster too. You know, Sam Decker has played very well in the times that they played him. Montrezl Harrell has played well. You know,
that, again, they're all healthy. What happens when Eric Gordon eventually is going to get injured?
Don't even get me started about Eric Gordon. I mean, it's clear that he just – it bothers me because I could see with the Pelicans / Hornets when they originally got him in the trade that he just did not want to be there. He was unhappy. I had no idea that Eric Gordon was so selfish that he would sabotage 4 years of his freaking career just to prove he didn't want to be there. But to be honest, Adam – it looks like that's what it was.
I don't know that.
I don't want to gloss over 4 years of a man's professional career and say, yeah, you mailed it in. But it really felt like it in New Orleans. Because in Houston, I mean, did you see the one where he turned the ankle in the Boston Celtics game? And then, let me tell you, if he was in New Orleans, he's out for a month. He's out for a month. Next, he plays the next game. Like, maybe it's because this was the first time that he made his own choice of where he wanted to go in free agency, because he didn't have that offer on the table as a restricted free agent, you know, in 2012. But it just feels like – but I agree with you. The whole point to get around it is that he's become a very, very efficient off guard.
And that's the thing, is he is now a complimentary piece. He was supposed to be the savior and the cornerstone of New Orleans, and it's a lot different when you have just everybody's getting injured around you, and you just have a – there was no real hope for the Pelicans ever.
Mm-hmm.
So you get that mentality here. It's just, well, nothing's expected of me. I'm just going to come in, play basketball, do my thing. And again, luck plays a bit. You know, the injuries, the turns aren't severe, and so
yeah,
– it's a difference.
And Trevor Reeves is playing well, too. That's a big part of it, too. I mean, he's just a big part of what they do, you know, at the small forward spot, because they don't really have a lot of strength there.
No, and that's the thing, is that's probably going to be their downfall. It's just...
But here's the thing. When they play the Warriors, because the Warriors, I believe, have lost 4 games so far. They just had the one that we were just talking about against Memphis on the road. But the home games that they lost to the Spurs in that opening night game, and they lost to the Rockets in overtime, or maybe it was double overtime. But that was one game where the Rockets really impressed me, where I was like, man, that was not a fluky win. The Rockets outplayed the Warriors. You know, and I wonder if the Warriors might be kind of in the same camp as the Memphis Grizzlies, where very different style from what Memphis does, but a team that could really give them trouble, because James Harden is such a bad matchup for the Warriors, because even though he's plays the point guard spot, he's so big that the guards for the Warriors just don't want to get in foul trouble because Harden is so great at drawing fouls.
Yeah, and they're going to always have problems with physical, the bigger physical bulldog type guards, because you know, they're soft, frail shooters, and there's a big difference.
Now, you don't think Harden's in assist fishing mode yet, right? Like, he's not Westbrook in it yet, you would say, huh?
No, because
I'm not trying to disparage Russell Westbrook, but I mean, because he does have to do everything for his team, but there are some points where it's like, okay, you're because to be honest, I mean, to put this in context, he's on his 7th straight triple double, you know, which is ridiculous. He's already had 12 this year, which is ungodly. He's on pace to average a triple double. He's currently averaging a triple double. So, but do you think that there are some games, because there are some games with Westbrook where it's like, okay, this guy's just going after the triple double. Like, do you feel like that with Harden with the assists, where it's like, I'm trying to share the ball. Look at me sharing the ball, you know?
No, because he has way too many just stupid turnovers to do it.
Okay, so it's just built in him to play like
it's
that.
Just the, I'm James Harden, everything must run through me.
Which is actually not the worst game plan in the world. You know, the there's this idea that like giving the ball to your star player is so simplistic and any coach could do it, but it doesn't really work that way because Kevin McHale had the same game plan and it failed miserably, you know?
Yeah, but they – that was just a complete –
a lot of philosophical differences there.
Yeah. There was just some culture clashing and a lot of toxicity in that situation.
Ooh, I like that word, toxicity. let me ask you this with the – let's kind of move on to the Eastern Conference since we really got a nice little dose of the West outside of – I mean, do you want to talk about anybody in the West or you want to kind of revisit
it? No, we can move on.
Okay, for the Eastern Conference, obviously Cleveland at 17-5. They did have that little dip. What's your thought about that? They had the loss to Milwaukee and then on the road. They go back home. The Clippers really hand it to them like we talked about. And then they go on a Friday night in Chicago where they play the Bulls. LeBron visits his buddy Dwayne Wade, still best friends from the banana boat, had to play off his bet. That he had to wear the opposing team's jersey from the World Series because Chicago played Cleveland, and because Cleveland lost, LeBron went to the United Center in full Cubs regalia, which was pretty funny. Dwayne Wade was grilling him on Instagram about it, or Snapchat, whatever one he was using. And but then Wade really gave it to him in the game itself. You know, Wade's a guy who, like, when he wants to turn it on, he still can do it, even if he's in a Bulls uniform. But that was their third loss in a row. They sort of picked up the pieces after that. LeBron had a 44-point game against the Charlotte Hornets on Saturday night. What did you think of that little divot that they had though?
They're going to be peaks and valleys for every team. You just can't read into it too much.
I mean, maybe they get three happy sometimes.
Everybody sort of gets three happy now, and especially
but the Cavs are especially there. Like, the only team that averages more made threes than them or 3-point attempts than them, I think, is the Rockets. They average more 3-point attempts than the Warriors.
But, you know, that was the whole coaching plan, right? And, you know, that's Tyronn Lue's, you know, oh, I'm coaching the team and this is my signature. And
yeah. Well, they still play great defense. That's the secret sauce to the Cleveland Cavaliers is that they're very tough defensively, especially inside when they can play the two big lineup with Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson. I mean, people have obviously figured it out, but some teams they fall into that trap of trying to shoot threes with the Cavs because they see how many threes they attempt per game and they don't realize how tough they are defensively. That's why I was surprised at how poorly LeBron was defensively against Dwayne Wade. I almost wonder if he just kind of like took the game off, you know?
Yeah. So sometimes I guess if you're not feeling it, you just sort of, well, you sort of have that feeling and you sort of, I don't want to say give up early, but it didn't seem like a full complete performance. Like, oh, it's early in the regular season. What does this prove? This proves nothing.
Yeah, Toronto's been okay. You know, they had a couple of strange losses. Didn't they just have one recently against they beat Boston. I do remember that one. Then they had the one really crazy game on TNT where, in the rare occasion, the Minnesota Timberwolves got a national game. But the Timberwolves defensively, oh my God! You want to elaborate on that for a second?
I don't think anybody really expected how bad this team really is.
Mm-hmm.
Like. You could see they're trying to implement Thibodeau's things, and I don't really know if this is going to really work because he's been known as being a taskmaster, and
it's not clicking yet.
Like, it's not clicking, and I don't.
Offensively, their starters are actually playing really well. Zach LaVine's playing great. Rubio called them. He had a quote. I think he called them like a not a broken team, but like it was a very disparaging, you know, team like lack of team unity type of quote that really perked your ears, which made you think maybe Rubio's trying to talk his way off the team, you know, trying to mark his trade value, but. You know, Wiggins is shooting the ball well. So is Zach LaVine. All those things that we predicted that they needed in order to take the next step is happening. The problem is nothing else is going right. Gorgui Dieng, along with Karl Towns, is not really working well, especially defensively. Towns had a 47-point game, and they lost. You know, it's just been, you know, they're going to have these games where they play really well offensively, but defensively it's just not – it's not set into stone yet. They did not figure out how to put that blueprint in.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. The team is just too young, and it's not, they got just too many random pieces. They don't have a team. It's just, do what you can, and we'll try to make it through. And the same thing happened last. There hasn't really been much of like an overall team improvement from last year.
Yeah, that's another part of it is that they did make a few changes, but Brandon Rush has made no impact. Cole Aldrich's been okay, but he's not been somebody that I've noticed. You know what I'm saying? And you know, just a couple other weird things with the Raptors, but I think they're all right. You know, they've been doing what they normally do. It gets interesting once you get past the two seed with Toronto because you have Charlotte. Boston, the New York Knicks have kind of surged back upwards. We talked about Chicago being a mild surprise because a lot of people predicted offensively they would be kind of a tire fire, and they have not. The Detroit Pistons with Reggie Jackson back, so good for them. They're back to over 500. The Atlanta Hawks at 12-12. How did this happen?
Just look at the schedule, and Kyle Korver has been out of the starting lineup for the past couple games.
I think people have realized, wait a minute, Kent Bazemore is your starting three. We could totally take advantage of this, you know?
Yeah, Kent Bazemore is the starting three, and oh, who's the backup? Korver, well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we found our sort of weak link there, and this, like I said, it was just you have games against Brooklyn and Philly. Oh, well, they're second place, and then all of a sudden just nosedive to out of the playoffs all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And it's just – you could just see, like, in the East, it's just like we mentioned, like, oh, you know, how are your rankings like this? It's just a lot of – I don't want to say mediocre teams because the mediocre teams are even just terrible.
Exactly. I think mediocrity is – awful is the new mediocrity. Like, I think all these teams that we're talking about in from the three spot all the way down to, I think, the nine spot, because there's six teams that are or eight teams that are separated by two games. So that'd be, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, friggin', you know, from seeds 3 to 10. You know, they're all pretty good until you get to maybe like Washington or Indiana. Maybe even Indiana's got their bright spots, despite that awful defensive performance against the Golden State Warriors where Klay Thompson just lit them up.
Yeah, and like you said, it's just in this three happy league, it's, you know, just look at just Boston, Al Horford. It's just, okay, we brought you in to be a big man to be dominant. Oh, you're just going to sit and shoot threes now. Oh, well.
How hard did you hit the table when Horford missed the layup against the Rockets?
It was just one of those games.
Well, first of all, he walked.
there's no more walk.
But if you watch it, you could clearly see he moved the pivot on when he went to the basket. But very exciting game. That was that loaded Wednesday night that also had was that Monday or was that Wednesday?
All the days just blend into one another now.
Yeah, that was Monday, but Monday was the same night as the Klay Thompson 60-point game, so people don't remember. But the Rockets beat the Celtics 107-106. Harden with obviously 37, 8, and 8, and it came right down to the wire at the end. Boston, they were trading the lead back and forth for like the majority of the fourth quarter, and then Horford got free and he just just missed a layup that rolled off to the front, and Harden got the rebound as the clock went out. And I mean, I don't think Horford's been a bad player for them at all. I mean, you don't have any regrets though, huh?
Oh no, he's still better than anything they had. He's still, you know, great. It's just the team has decided to become a mediocre shooting team when, you know, you can see their problem is, well, you need rebounding. So let's just do less of it and just try to do more threes.
Well, Brad Stevens has to wear the tie. Have you seen the statistic that in the games where he doesn't wear the tie this year, that they have like a horrible losing record?
Yeah, that's just I don't know who found that stat.
That it's a really funny one. Remember that happened with Jason Kidd when he first started coaching the Nets, and he took the tie. He stopped using the tie, and they got on a winning streak. It didn't help him in the playoffs when the Heat beat him 4-1. But it's just always nice to have those stupid little nuggets to go back on. The New York Knicks. What are they doing right? I mean, is it just Carmelo Anthony getting hot after Phil Jackson's kind of insane comment that Anthony's a ball hog, and that in the triangle offense they used to have a rule that you couldn't hold the ball for 2 seconds or longer, which is like the dumbest thing I've ever heard, because almost the entirety of the triangle offense was Shaq, Kobe, and Michael Jordan just hogging the ball. You know what I'm saying?
Well, nobody can hold the ball for 2 seconds until you get it back to, you know, your point man on that, whoever
it might be. I think he has to reiterate himself. I think what it is you can hold – the rule is for everybody but the superstars, you can't have the ball for longer than 2 seconds.
Exactly.
I think that's what he's trying to get to.
I don't want to say the Knicks are doing anything right or wrong. It's just like I sort of said, there's just a lot of average, mediocre basketball right now. And are they really doing great? No, because Noah still seems to be lost out there. Mm-hmm. Porzingis is – even, you know, getting further from the basket now, showing his, you know,
his block rate's still pretty good though. He's still a presence at 7'3". You know, he's definitely developed his game. I will say that it's not like, hey, it's the same Porzingis we saw last year. No, Porzingis has gotten better. You know, absolutely gotten better.
Yeah, the team is just they're better because the team was supposed to be better to begin with. It's. You know, you put a lot of money into the team. You're supposed to, you know, are they the top three teams that you know, delusional Knicks fans thought they'd be? No, but they're there in the thick of things because, well, they're better than the crappy, you know, the basement is just really so far bad. Everybody is just that one step above the Orlando and even, like we said, Washington. It's like, well, they could be in this group if they want to, but they're mm-hmm. really not good enough. And you're Indiana, sort of. It's just by default everybody's in here. So
Derrick Rose has turned into that, like, five-day rest ace. Like, he's that guy that every third or fourth game he can be really, really good. Like, did you see the one where he had 30 points and like 8 assists? Like, he looked really, really good. Then they rested him just so that they didn't waste him on the back-to-back. So, you know, but it feels like Rose has really gotten accustomed to being with the Knicks and kind of being happy there. With Noah, not so much. It's been a little tougher. The problem with Noah is you literally can't move him. It's a 4-year, $72 million contract. That might be a really awful contract in the next 2 years, but for now you're stuck with him. Whereas with Derrick Rose, he's got an option next year. We'll see what happens with it, but at least they found a point guard. You know, so one thing I can say with the Knicks, at least they found a point guard. The Milwaukee Bucks are at 11-11. They're at 500, just like the Indiana Pacers and the Atlanta Hawks. I don't know. I mean, the Bucks are kind of what we thought they would be. You know, a mixed bag. You know, Giannis Antetokounmpo took that step to being a superstar player. Jabari Parker's taken strides. Matthew Dellavedova was a good addition, but overall, they still struggle with their offensive identity. They move John Henson up and down the lineup, trying to figure out what works for their rebounding, which has gotten a lot better. Defensively, they've struggled a little bit. I mean, they're kind of a mystery.
They're also better than we thought they'd be, you know, terrible as well.
I would say they're about as good as we thought they would be.
You thought they'd be 500? I don't think anybody really had them that high.
Well, it does seem a little rosy now you say it, but I think a lot of people did like them. You know, but I think the other thing too that you got to understand, Adam, there's this the other phase of the Chris Middleton injury phase where people are like, oh, write him off, they're done, put a whole fork in them. But it feels like with Middleton, it's even more like sporadic. Like you don't know what Bucks team you're going to get. You might get the Bucks team that beats the Cleveland Cavaliers. You might get a Bucks team that loses to the Orlando Magic. Like you don't know what you're going to get sometimes.
Yeah, that is the problem with that team. And again, there's another young team. You have, like you said, Antetokounmpo. He's been crazy destroying it, but he's also in his new position. Everybody's sort of developing. And Greg Monroe, well, okay, he's good for 25 minutes. He can't
do much.
And
they won that trade with Tony Snell and Michael Carter Williams.
Well, that's just the Carter Williams train continuing to.
I mean, has he even debuted yet for the Bulls?
He got injured, I believe.
Well, he injured his wrist to start the season. He broke his wrist on a really bad tumble, but I don't know if he's come back yet, is what I'm saying. I don't think so. If he did, I'd have noticed him, which means he hasn't done anything. But Snell has been like a starter at the two because of Middleton's injury. So, you know, nice little plug-in, you know, something that they needed at the time. But Antetokounmpo is fantastic. You know, if you're a fantasy guy, Giannis is your guy.
Yep.
With Indiana, defensively, we've already talked about that because of the Klay Thompson fiasco, but we had already seen signs of defensively Indiana falling off a cliff before this. Paul George has had a 37-point game on Saturday night. Miles Turner really taking that step up as like as their signature big man. Charlotte, you got to start to cop out that you were wrong about Charlotte.
That what, they're terrible?
Yes.
They're not terrible. I don't think they're very good, though. I didn't think, you know, just me giving them the low ranking, it doesn't mean they were going to end up there at the end. It was just, I didn't see much hope going into that team. You have Kidd Gilchrist and you have Batum, neither of which are scorers.
And MKG's numbers have shrunk over the last 2 weeks. He's gone down to less than 30 minutes.
You have Marvin Williams, who, you know, I don't see him putting up.
Stretch big. Know. He's now a stretch big.
Yeah, that's what he's become all of a sudden. And Kaminsky still, you know, shooting threes, not really doing much else. And
he did. His knee did a good job injuring Mike Conley's back, though.
It's just, yeah, Kemba Walker continues to overachieve. And, yeah, the team is good. I don't, you know, they were going to make the playoffs either way.
Does Kemba Walker go to the All-Star game?
I don't see why he shouldn't.
But, you know, you got all that competition down at the bottom when you're not a guaranteed fan vote. You know, you never
There's a lot of politicking, yes, but.
Yeah, Giannis has to go in, obviously. You know, and I mean, there's going to be some competition there. They were talking about this on another show. About how the West one's going to be interesting because if you look at the numbers, it might dwindle down to either DeAndre Jordan or Karl Anthony Towns, and that's actually a really tough choice between the two.
You know? That is a very interesting choice.
Yeah, I mean, it's if you look at it, you know, it kind of works out that way. Whereas, you know, in the East, it's a little cleaner, but the fan vote with Kristaps Porzingis, that's another one who might make the All-Star game. I think Porzingis is going to wind up out. But then again, you got the fan vote, and they might, you know, those New York fans, they might just jump in and just put him in the starting lineup. You know what I'm saying? You never know sometimes.
Yeah, the fan vote always throws a wrench into everything.
Yeah, I call it the Grant Hill rule. I love Grant Hill, but he was in the All-Star game. He was voted in the All-Star game when he had no business being in it. The teams that are out, Orlando and Washington. Washington's at 9-13, but shockingly, this is actually better than we thought they would be right now because they were in a crater in the month of November. Like, have they really turned any? I know that John Wall had the 52-point game where they lost to Orlando anyway, but Bradley Beal's had some really good performances. They've won six out of their last 10, won two in a row. Are they doing anything different? Or, like, maybe are they mixing Markieff Morris in a little bit more, taking Marcin Gortat out some more, maybe more of the Otto Porter? Like, are they doing anything different?
I don't think they're doing anything different. Their bench is still terrible.
It's the worst bench in the league. You're absolutely true. Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know. It's just, yeah, you know, they were playing worse than anybody expected. So, you know, by default, they had to get better, I think. Mm-hmm. And this is just sort of the case. By no stretch are they good right now.
Yeah, I'm looking at their – I'm looking at – staring at their box score where they beat the Bucks because it's just a sign of them, you know, in a win. And it's the same starting lineup. It's Porter, Morris, Gortat, Beal, and Wall. The one guy that gets a lot of play is Kelly Oubre, you know, but that just shows how bad the bench is. But, it, you know, it doesn't look like they change much. If they change anything, it's offensive or defensive sets, you know?
Yeah, it's – like I said, it's just eventually you just need to get each – just warm up to the new system, and they'll be back to middling at 500 before no time, I guess.
Satoransky, does he last more than a year? I think he'll go back to Europe.
No, I think he'll stay. It's just...
it's just not working. I mean, Trey Burke, kind of a bust. I wouldn't call him a bust because he was like a later pick, but it didn't really work out. They're so desperate they had to play Daniel House and Sheldon McClellan, undrafted free agents, you know, on their
Trey
bench.
Trey Burke?
Yeah, Trey Burke.
Wasn't he the ninth pick, or
he was in the lottery? You're right.
He
about
was.
That.
It was him and Gordy Dang for Shabazz Muhammad. Shabazz was 15th or 16th.
Yeah, and Shabazz was late to the draft, if you remember.
He
actually showed up late.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying Trey Burke. He was.
So is that bust level when you get in the lottery and you have a 4-year career where you do nothing?
It's just he had – this was the chance he could – you're only a bust if you fail on your second team. Failing on one team is just a bad situation. You know, anything could go wrong.
Yeah.
Bad coach, bad system behind.
He's not going to get the great second contract. They call it the life-changing money. You know, you're not going to get that. Trey Burke's going to have to settle for mid-level.
He'll get the one-year, $5 million, yeah. Prove it to me.
Yes.
Deal, and it's – yeah, ninth pick overall.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those ones that didn't work out. Maybe they're desperate for Oubre to work out. That's why they're giving him more time, ahead of some of the bench guys that they have. I do like Otto Porter Jr. That's one where I think we talked about this on a previous episode. So I'm sorry if I'm being repetitive, but I do think they're going to regret not giving Porter the extension, whatever they could have agreed to and not coming to an agreement. I think they might regret that because they're going to pay for it in the summer when they have to fork it over on an offer sheet. Which
I don't think they had a problem with to begin with.
I know, but they're already cap straddled with the Ian Mahimi signing, the fact that Bradley Beal, they had to use his bird rights, and, you know, Wall's deal's not going to be – how much longer? It's just 2 more years? Like, Wall's deal's going to be up pretty soon. You know?
Yeah, but you can move people. You can move Ian Mahimi. You got the bench guys are not super long deals, so
yeah.
It's one of those you make that risk. It's like, well, if we have to pay him max money, that means it's because he's become a max player.
Yes,
and that's not really a terrible thing. The only problem is he's, you know, I guess he's gonna get max money by default because you figured, yeah, somebody like Brooklyn's gonna be like, oh, we'll give him max money.
And then we
got nothing to lose.
You wanted to mention something about Orlando for a second, about that you know, they were playing really well about a week ago because, you know, like we said, we had 2 weeks between this. For a week, they played really well, and then they lost. Then they dropped 3 in a row. Like, what do you see out of Orlando? Like, are they making any lineup changes? It's obvious the Wizards aren't, but what about Orlando?
Orlando, it's just Hennigan. He blew up the team too many times. We need to blow it up, you know, the Dwight Howard. Let's get all picks. Okay, we got our picks. We got Tobias Harris. We got Oladipo. We got Mo Harkless. Now they have absolutely none of those guys. Mm-hmm. You trade it all for Bismack Biyombo, who we know can't shoot. You trade it all for Serge Ibaka, who's not an offensive scorer. Mm-hmm. And it's just, well, where's these points going to come from? And, you know, you move Vucevic to the second unit. Alfred Payton still hasn't gotten anything.
Yeah, and they got so desperate that they had to put DJ Augustin in. You know, Jeff Green comes in only because they needed a body, you know, at the small forward spot. Now that Aaron Gordon is – you know, I hate how they've treated Aaron Gordon at the small forward spot, but maybe Vucevic being moved to second unit can give an excuse to have Gordon slide to the four at times. Unless it's one of those Congo lines like they joke about with Ibaka and Biyombo.
I don't want to say I hate the way they've been treating him. I think it's just sort of like the Zach LaVine-Levine thing. They still don't know what he is and what he can do and what type of player he's going to be.
Did you just make that comparison because they were in the slam dunk contest against each other?
No.
Or maybe because they're the same types of athletes, super duper athletes that are kind of positionless.
That they're still so raw and they're too good to be sitting on the bench, but they're not good enough to be part of a structured.
Yeah.
Well, here's your spot.
And here's the thing. Oh, you go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
It's one of those, you're too good to be there, but you're too bad to be here. So you're just floating around. Well, we can't put you on the second unit because you're just dominating those guys, because all the second unit is meant to do is just literally, you know, don't blow the game.
But the upsetting part of it with Hennigan is they already went through that project with Oladipo and they let him go. You know, well, they didn't let him go. They got Ibaka in the trade. But, you know, Oladipo is sort of gaining ground in Oklahoma City, sort of kind of finding his footing. Did you see that wicked Dominique dunk he got on Dwight Howard?
Yep.
Very nice. Very, very nice. There was one that was pretty ruthless. I couldn't remember who it was. You know what? I'm skipping it. I think it was Grayson Allen for Duke. I don't know if you saw that one, but Grayson Allen for Duke against UNLV got a pretty wicked dunk. Probably the best dunk I've seen this year. And then there was one with Wayne Selden in the D League. Did you see that one?
D League is all
D League basketball is just like, yeah. But yeah, very innocuous out of nowhere type of things. Trying to remember some of the wicked dunks I've seen, but there was one in particular with Victor Oladipo. But anyways, with Hennigan with the Magic, it felt the same way with Oladipo. They tried to put him at the one. They bring in Payton, and then they still try to play him at the one with Payton as sort of like the backup point guard, and that didn't work. And now they shipped him off, and now they got Aaron Gordon, and they're doing the same thing at the forward spot where they don't really know what they want to do on them, and they're going to waste their opportunity with him if they wind up trading him for value. You know, they might wind up wasting him. Let's just kind of finish up with a little bit of rapid fire. What's wrong with, and I'm going to just give you a few things and we'll just do some quick answers. What's wrong with Portland's defense?
Their roster construction is what's wrong with their defense. You spend all your money on combo guard forwards. Their front court is by far the worst front court in the league.
Mm-hmm.
You're not stopping anybody that way.
What's wrong with the Spurs at home versus their road record? Are they kind of trying to figure themselves out too?
They're figuring themselves out. I think they're going with that old school Celtics doc way. It's just, well, if we're gonna be good somewhere, be good on the road. We can figure it out at home.
Oh, that's a good point.
As opposed to that, well, we need to defend our house. Well, what happens if you go on the road? Well, you're gonna now start losing. So let's just be that road warrior team.
I really do like that. I never thought of it that way. That's the first time I've really thought of it that way. That's actually pretty interesting.
Because in years past, when do they always come together? They always come together on
the rodeo. Yeah.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. if we got our road bearings down now, that rodeo, we don't need to figure it out because we're already in mid-season road form.
Let me see here. What's wrong with what was the one that I just had here? What's wrong with Alvin Gentry not being fired yet?
Is this
one of those Avery Johnson with the Brooklyn Nets things where we're just like waiting for it?
There's no – who's going to replace him now? You're going to have an interim coach who will be just as terrible?
It would probably wind up being Darren Erman.
Who has no shot of keeping the job, really.
It's true. You're right.
So what's the point of firing him? The only thing Gentry could do is just continue to be like, you know, it's like the Lakers last year. Well, you're doing detriment to your team. Well, all of a sudden, you know, you give Anthony Davis rest and Sheik Diallo plays 30 minutes. And all of a sudden, he looked like he could play.
Yeah.
He didn't look terrible. Why did you bury him in the D League? Why is Buddy Hield getting 2 minutes a game? If there's a difference between tanking and let's get these guys some minutes. There's no reason they shouldn't each be getting 20 minutes.
What's wrong with the Lakers without D'Angelo Russell, who had that plasma surgery?
There's nobody. You have no bench.
Mm-hmm.
You gave all your money.
Well, you got Lou Williams, but is he starting right now?
Lou Williams is a two.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a 6'1" two guard who's just going to shoot. So he's not. You have your lineup. You have your young core who are playing together, and it's just, well, let's put a bench player in. Well, our bench doesn't really. We don't have a backcourt bench, really.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, remember they cut Anthony Brown because they didn't really have any spot for him, you know. And then they bring in Nick Young, but Nick Young had an injury too, I believe. So he kind of got dinged by the injury bug in this. Not as bad as the Grizzlies, of course, but when you lose D'Angelo Russell, I mean, because D'Angelo Russell was playing really, really well. Like, it wasn't like D. Russ was, like, having, like, the sophomore shakes. Like, he was playing really well before he went out with the – I think they had to, like, reinsert some blood in his knee. Is that what it was?
Something weird.
Like a spin – some spin – I don't know. Something that came out of Westworld. Speaking of Westworld again. And finally, the one I'll give you is, what's wrong with the Donatas Monte Yunus situation?
Posturing agents.
Okay.
Really, it's
now. I will say the offer sheet was pretty creative and pretty team friendly. You know, it's not guaranteed on the set. It's a 4-year offer sheet, not guaranteed in the last 2 years. I think in year two of the offer sheet of the contract, you can still waive him after March 1st. You know,
it's none of the years. The only guaranteed year is this year. So essentially, it's a 1 year, $8.3 million. It was what happened. I think is just his agent didn't realize how friendly he made it for Houston.
Mm-hmm. And then they had second thoughts after it was matched, and Monte Yunus balked at going to the physical.
Well, then it was Houston's like, okay, we'll match it, but based upon our matching it, we'll only match the principal part, so, well, here's $7 million less because we don't have to, you know, do all these little extra bells and whistles.
Yeah, why do we have to do the back end? Exactly, we're not going to keep
them. Yeah, and then it's just sort of one of those, like, well, just find a happy medium. And they did find the happy medium. It was just, well, I don't think Monte Yunus was just, well, you know, he's pissed off because, well, Houston didn't really want him after the back injury. He's like, well, I'm back. Well, no, you're not. You're still injured. Well, we're going to wait to re-sign you. Well, we're still not going to re-sign you. There's going to be no interest. And then it was one of those,
Yeah, and this is not the first time. I mean, we've seen this before. I'm trying to remember some of the names where I mean, J.R. Smith, this almost happened, you know, just this season. But for previous years, I remember quite a few times where contract negotiations spilled, like, for restricted RFAs spilled over this far. It's just the problem with RFAs is they're rookies. They're on rookie deals. So they can't really afford to sit time and – they feel like they have to prove themselves. With Monte Yunus, I guess he just felt like he didn't really have a need to prove himself. And the Rockets weren't desperate enough with their lineup because we already just illustrated how deep they are at the big man spot or at the four and the three the four and the five, is that the Rockets weren't desperate enough to just bring Monte Yunus into camp and play him right away despite the issues. I think one that happened was Marcin Gortat with the Magic. You remember that one where they matched him but he didn't want them to match? And then they wound up having to use him in a trade with the Suns because he was unhappy.
I don't know.
That was around 2010. Like they,
I just remember all the Suns and Eric Gordon, don't sign me, New Orleans.
Yes.
And,
no,
but the thing is,
yeah, go ahead.
You know, what it comes down to is just, it looks bad for you going forward if you're, well, we're going to nickel and dime this and we don't, you know, we just gave a shit ton of money to Eric Gordon. We gave a shit ton of money to Ryan Anderson. Well, but with this guy, we're going to nickel and dime him. So, you know, there aren't a ton of NBA agents. So you do one guy bad. Well, don't go to Houston. Houston, you know, I'm going to protect the other guys. And it's just sort of a PR thing. And like, okay, you want a nickel and dime? Well, maybe I'm going to steer my other guys to these other teams.
Yeah.
Who will care about my player.
This is what
will make my.
Yeah, I'm not going to be leveraging you down the road if you're going to screw my guy now, you know, for smaller deals. Yeah. So, you know, it's a lot of politicking. But here's the thing with Monte Yunus with the back. Back injuries. You and I talked about this on a chat before. Back injuries are really crippling. I mean, all injuries are bad, but back injuries are the worst. I mean, we've seen that with Rob Gronkowski over in your neck of the woods and with the New England Patriots. You know, it could just – I mean, back injury could just end you, you know. Even a knee – you can come back from a knee injury. Look at that guy with the Panthers, Thomas Davis. He tore his ACL 3 times. He's still playing. You know, Derrick Rose, how many times did he bust his knee? 2 or 3 times?
Yep, and just to sort of wrap things up in a nice little neat bow as we've done, With college football, surprise players haven't done that before. With Willis McGahee completely tearing his leg,
yes,
in the playoff game. So, well, I need to protect myself. I don't want to come in and all of a sudden my stock is going to go way down because I got injured in a game that really doesn't matter. For teams that, like, okay, we're in the Final Four, being in the playoffs. Yeah, I don't. That's sort of, you know, selfish. Like, oh, I'm going to take myself out because I'm going to go pro, but I don't care if my team wins. Mm-hmm. And that'll hurt your stock, but it's just, oh, I'm in a shitty bowl that doesn't matter, that counts as absolutely nothing. Why should I get a career-threatening injury and take years off, you know? Yeah. Why am I going to take millions off my table to do essentially just a glorified exhibition game? Because most of them, you watch these, like, lower bowls, they don't try hard.
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course not. Now, I will say, a bowl game is a great glimpse into what's to come. Like, they'll play a lot of guys that probably didn't get a lot of play, in the regular season, but you're going to see them the following season. So the coach has this idea in mind of, well, we're not really playing for anything other than pride, so let's just bring in some guys that have been in camp and in practice and are on our roster that haven't gotten a lot of play, but we really like them for next year so that they could just give. In the NCAA tournament, Adam, you can't afford that. You just can't. Like, you got to go with your best lineup. In a bowl game, yeah, you can fuck around, you know? The regular season in the NBA is sort of a laboratory in a ways.
Yeah, let's just throw in this wrinkle. We want to have our power forward bring up the ball for a couple of series. Oh, let's do that.
Yeah.
Oh, we're trying this sort of hitch route for this, and we don't use our tight end. Well, let's just throw it to our tight end like 7 times this game. Let's let's try to use that. You know, let's see what he can do, and let's see how, you know, let's try zone blocking as opposed to man blocking, and it's all sort of develop next year at the same time. Like I said, with the NBA, let's demote Kyle Korver. Let's, you know, Vucevic. Oh, sorry, you're now on the second team for no, you know, not a legitimate reason. We're just tweaking things out.
Yeah, I think one topic that we'll talk about next time that I think you and I can kind of illustrate a little bit, and one that's, when it comes to, like, game planning, that really makes a difference, defenses that can switch. You know, because that's just a huge, huge thing. But we're going to talk about that, you know, as we go to another episode down the road. So any things that you want to add before we get out of here?
No, we'll be back. We should be back once more before the end of the year, I think. A little season wrap up.
Yeah, we got Christmas, you know, year in review. Christmas preview. You know, we always like the Christmas. And, I mean, Cavs Warriors, I mean, come on. That's a great matchup. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care how much Debbie Downer you want to be about the Christmas lineup, which you usually are, but that's a good matchup.
Yes, it is.
That's about as close as you're going to get to being excited about an NBA.
I was excited last year, and that game last year failed miserably.
It was a great
game. Yeah, so that's why I could get hyped up all I want, but the game's going to be a dud.
Yeah. A little bit too much eggnog in the system. All right, I'll have that.